this yellow-haired girl, Mr. Jones strikes up a conversation with the black-haired man goes dancing. You know she dances while his father plays guitar. She's suddenly beautiful, and we all want something beautiful. Man, I wish I was beautiful. So come dance the silence down through the morning.
Welcome to another episode of Valiant Versus with host Mike Myers, and we are going to be talking about Ninjak. But before we get to Ninjak, I am going to go over some listener feedback. One of the tweets that I got was from Jay Tomo on Twitter, and he mentioned that the new EXO did have Eternal Warrior in it, and I double checked it, and it was a small panel, and he did have a few words with the king. But if you notice the three scars on his on his eye, it is the Eternal Warrior. It's just not addressed as Galad or anything. So I didn't notice it until he pointed that out to me. So thanks to Jay, I notice it now. And I also am kind of sick, so if I'm clearing my throat a lot, or if you hear a cough drop in my mouth, that's what's going on. So that was one listener feedback. I also want to thank Valiant Central for supporting the show, Paul and Martin. Really appreciate it. And I got a couple of letters, which is really rare. I hardly ever get emails, proper emails. It's mostly via Facebook or Twitter nowadays. But I did get a couple of emails that I want to go over. Let me get there. And the first one is from Kyle Pettit. And Kyle has been listening to a lot of my shows for a long time. And I think his favorite is the Geek Brunch Retrocast, where we talk about books that are 10 years or older, or TV, or movies that are 10 years or older, or music, or whatever else is retro. But Kyle was kind enough to send an email on the first episode, and he just says, "Hey, Mike, I just wanted to say I really love the idea of Valiant Versus you were doing, and also want to share my thoughts." He says he loves EXO Volume 1, and he thinks that Shooter was on the cutting edge of creativity back on the 90s. He can't say anything bad about what he did for Valiant. However, I would say that Venditti, God, I can't even say it, has taken EXO into more three-dimensional world. Shooter laid the foundation, but Volume 3 is so well-developed that it is my favorite. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of them. What I was really looking at was not the series as a whole, because I think Volume 3 will, you know, start migrating to me to being my favorite just because of the flashbacks and stuff. But the reason I picked Volume 1 over Volume 3 was because of the language. I thought it was cutting edge that Arik didn't speak English, and when he, you know, the hard skin and the soft skin and all that, and he started off on the spaceship, and that to me is pretty much what threw it over the top. But they're pretty damn close for me. But I can see where you're coming from, and I think a lot of people will agree with you if they read it now. When I read books and my mind shifts. So like if I'm reading a book in the 90s, my mind shifts into 90s mode. And when I'm reading a book now, it's in now. So it's a little different than if like somebody else that reads something and compares it to now and asks if they hold up. I know the Valiant Central does that in Ivar's Longbox, and it's kind of hard for me to relate to, because holds up doesn't work with me, because it's my mind shifts back into the time that I read it or the time period. And now I'm shifting back into the 40s as I'm reading Golden Age All-Star Comics and stuff, and my mind does shift. I don't compare it to JSA now. I kind of do. But this podcast, I am comparing them because I'm reading them time, but I'm trying to read them in the mode that I read the book in originally. So that's why I came up with that. And he says he loves seeing the historical part of Arik's life. I totally agree. That part of it I really love. Like there's the between Dead Hand. In between Dead Hand, there was an issue that gave a lot of his backstory with his wife, his previous wife. Absolutely loved that issue that Venditti did. I thought it was phenomenal. And I agree with that comment. And it says, also one more thing that really struck me was the tragedy of Arik being taken from his family and his time. True. And that is featured more and stressed more in Volume 3 because he is a man out of time. He's kind of like Captain America, but to the extreme because he's in present world and he came from a barbarian. You know, he was a Visigoth fighting the Romans. So that's a little more tragic than to go from World War II to current time. But he said, thanks for your time and I look forward to future episodes. Well, hopefully you'll be getting at least two a month, at least one for sure. It just depends on my availability. But I thank you for supporting all my shows and listening to them. So that leads me into the second email, and it's from Kimo. And his last name is Kipo. I don't know if I butchered that or not, but he just said he wanted to let me know that he really enjoyed Valiant Versus episode 1. He would love for me to continue the series. He says, I've been reading Valiant from the VH1 days and appreciated the trip back to memory lane with you detailing each volume. As you're reviewing volume 1, it really took me back to when I first enjoyed these series. The one that really connected with me is when you commented on Arik spoke back in the VH1 days. That's what hit me, is the way he spoke. And he was adapting to the language of where he was in, but just a few words. I just loved it. And then he compares it to today's version. And yes, I totally agree with you. I love the way he spoke. Very basic, broken, or in caveman-like way, especially how he called the spider aliens hardskins. Yeah, I totally agree. And that's that for its time. Just the way it was presented still blows me away on how good it was. It just such a phenomenal way of writing. And you know exactly with the art and the story working together, you know exactly what's happening, even though the language is totally different. And it's not intrusive. Like sometimes comic books that you read will try to introduce a new alien language or something like that. And sometimes that new language is kind of strange and weird. But in this case, it just flowed so well and it worked well. And he said, definitely keep on the parts about the music, TV, and what's going on during that year. He thought it was a good move and it takes readers back down to memory lane. He says, keep up the good work. I appreciate your passion and love for the comic medium, and especially for Valiant. Thank you, Kimo. I really appreciate that you took the time to write this email. I love to get emails from people. And I like your email address. I didn't realize what it is, but it's sort of Valiant-y. So that's really cool. And that goes over the feedback that I got from the first episode, which was Exo Man of War, Volume 1, 2, and 3, Number 1. So now we're jumping into Ninjak, which is kind of exciting and kind of weird. It's exciting because it's happening now, and it's kind of weird because it's happening now because Ninjak was just launched. Ninjak has been in Unity for quite some time, and they've been building up his character. And in one of the later issues of Unity, right before Ninjak, it actually was like a solo Ninjak story. And it almost felt like a Ninjak number 0, but it was in Unity, and it really flowed well. So if you just got Ninjak, you should seek out that issue of Unity, because it is a big deal. Let me see if I can get you that issue of Unity, what that issue is. I'm looking up in my database, which is ComicBase, one of the best databases on the planet if you have a large collection, and I have a huge collection. So it supports bar scanning, so you get a new issue or you get several issues and you just go get your scanner and go bloop, 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 scan them right in. It's beautiful. It's a Unity number 15, and I got cover A, but there are a couple other covers that you might be interested in. So I would recommend, if you're getting into Ninjak and you came on Ninjak number 1, whether it be on in print or digital or whatever, that you go back and check out Unity 15. I know that they had a loot crate, and I think it was a brilliant move on the part of Valiant to get Ninjak number 1 in the latest loot crate. The loot crate was like spy themed, so it had like a James Bond t-shirt, and it had God, what is that TV show? A comic book from IDW based on one of the TV shows from the BBC. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it was the number one comic book sold in America. Man, I don't remember what it is. I can't remember. But anyway, the point is Loot Crate is, I don't know, $15-16, and you get like a bunch of stuff. And it is fun to do that kind of thing. If you like to be surprised, each box is themed and you get a bunch of stuff. And if you feel like you get your $15 worth of stuff, it might be something to look into. I don't get it, but I am thinking about it, because I think it's a good price. Even if you just get a t-shirt, and they're decent t-shirts, you can get some value out of it, guaranteed. And if you have exclusive covers, like the one that they just had, then you might enjoy that. So, man, that's driving me crazy what that title is. I could find out, but I'm not going to worry about it right now because it's not Valiant. So, the first book we're going to cover is Ninjak Number 1, Volume 1, by Mark Morietti and Joe Quesada, with inks by Jimmy Palmiotti. That is a fantastic team. I mean, Mark Morietti has done a lot for Valiant, and this was a fantastic, like, first issue coming off the bat. Joe Quesada, brilliant artist. He's really up in the chains of Marvel, and Jimmy Palmiotti is doing fantastic right now with, like, Harley Quinn and Jonah Hex, a lot of the books that have been canceled, but they're brilliant, and he does a wonderful Kickstarters, and he's a force within DC as far as writing, in my opinion, and he's a good inker. So I really like both of these guys, and they worked really well together when they were doing like Daredevil and all kinds of the Marvel Knights stuff. They actually worked together. They were kind of like their own company with Marvel Knights that brought us like Black Panther by Christopher Priest, Daredevil, Punisher, even though that Punisher was really weird because he was like dead and he was an angel. There were several Marvel Knights titles, Inhumans by Paul Jenkins. And a lot of these names that I'm mentioning have done stuff for Valiant. Paul Jenkins recently for Shadow Man. So, yeah, it's a wonderful time to be reading comics. And back then it was a wonderful time to be reading comics. And the cover date on that was February 1994. So, what was going on in 1994? Well, one of the big songs that was going on, or albums, was Power of Love by Celine Dion. These are Billboard album. Alice in Chains, Jar of Files. John Michael Montgomery, Kick It Up. And Toni Braxton, Toni Braxton. So those are some of the key albums out. Of those, I know Celine Dion. I actually have one of her CDs. I don't think it's that one. And Alice in Chains. I don't know. I've heard Toni Braxton, but I don't have anything. I'm not a fan. And man, I can't really think of John Michael Montgomery at all. So Be interested to see if you guys know anything about that John Michael Montgomery. Movies, there are some really good movies. One that was really popular and started Jim Carrey's career, Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. He was in, you know, True Colors, and then I think that comedy that I think it was called True Colors, In Living Color. In Living Color, he was in that show. And that kind of kicked him off into, you know, Ace Ventura, Mask, and all the other roles. And now he's a million-dollar actor. He was in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So in that year, that month, that's what was out. My Father, the Hero. That one, I think, starred the guy from Gerard Depardieu. I think it was that guy. I'm not sure, and I never watched that one. On Deadly Ground was a Steven Seagal movie. Blank Check, never watched it. Sugar Hill, I heard of it, but never watched it. Blue Chips and Reality Bites from that year. So that's kind of what we had for Ninjak Volume 1, February 1994, which leads us into the book itself, which you get a chromium cover. Okay, when I saw these chromium covers, I absolutely loved them. And I think they're far superior than the new Valiant chromium covers. Just in look, in the way you tilt it, it doesn't look like etched like the new ones do. It looks really smooth. And it has Ninjak like busting a colored window, like maybe even a church window, you know, with the stained glass. It is pretty brilliant. Really great design. The scene opens up like near an ocean in Monaco. And you have two characters. We have Mr. DeVries, who's doing a deal with the Weaponeer organization. And we have the character Sala. And they're dealing with them. And he's selling them stingers. Missiles, heat-seeking stingers, to the getting them from, you know, to the Weaponeers, and he just wants to get paid. And Mr. DeVries has a woman hanging on her, and she's key to this book, really key. Her name is Dominique, very sexy woman, and part like on his shoulders. And what you see immediately is that Pierre gets double-crossed. Mr. DeVries gets double-crossed because he asked for his payment, and they said, no, we need to renegotiate. Your price is too steep. And he says, what do you mean? We agreed to this. And he gets real defensive. And Masla is kind of like the big bodyguard. And Mr. DeVries says, Dominique warned me not to trust anyone in the group. And that one guy, Sala, says, you should have listened to the lady. There's good, damn good reason, because Dominique pulls the gun on Mr. DeVries. That was his girlfriend. She, like, betrayed him. She puts the gun right to his head. Mr. DeVries flips out. He tackles her, like, is you bitch, you know, and knocks her down, but she shoots him right in the chest and leaves him dead. And he is terminated. But what's interesting about this is that Colin King, Ninjak, is watching. And he's watching very carefully. He's watching everything that goes on. And she basically says, Dominique has to leave on a date. And she's going to miss Colin King. So he witnessed what she did to Mr. DeVries. And that he's going to be on a date with her very, very soon. And the two guys that are talking are left behind. He says, it should be interesting to see what she soaks that Playboy King for. And then the scene cuts to another, you know, the waterfront here again, which is the scene that just left. And Ninjak attacks. He basically throws a discus. It's not like quite like a shining star, but he throws it and knocks the lights out. It hits the light sockets. Like, there's three in a row, and it hits them simultaneously. Like, it goes ting-ding, and it knocks the lights out, and then he attacks. And one of the things that's really cool, he slashes this one guy right in the midsection with his sword. And the big bodyguard, Mosla, he grabs an Uzi and he's kind of holding the Uzi with both hands and he's going brah, 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 and he gets both hands cut off. They're sliced off and his blood is gushing off of it, and the Uzi is still firing. And then he attacks one of the main guys, and you know that he's dead. So he goes by Mr. DeVries, who's holding a bracelet. And it was a bracelet. It was Dominique's bracelet. He managed to pull it off of her when he was attacking her, because he had given her that bracelet. And now he's dead. So Ninjak takes that bracelet, and then he takes one of the stingers and the bazookas and shoots it at the ship and blows the whole thing up. Now we cut to Monaco, the hotel, and Dominique is showering, and she is singing Madonna, actually. Colin King just walks in on her, even though she's coming out of the shower and she's wearing a towel. He just walks in on her, and he finishes the song for her. It's she's saying, "If you don't give me the proper credit, I just walk away. They can beg and they can plead, but they can't see the light, because the boy with the cold hard cash is always Mr. Right." So that's a Madonna song they're singing. And then he basically said, I'm sorry I showed up unannounced, and I found your bracelet. It was in the hallway. You must have dropped it. And he says, "We have reservations at 11. And she says, "You know what? I have a better idea. Let's cancel it and eat in." So while that's happening, Sala basically got away, and he's driving in his car, and he's talking. He's like, "I need to get a hold of Dominique. I need to get a hold of Dominique," because he believes that Colin King is going over there to hurt her. And the phone keeps ringing, but she doesn't answer. And on the door, they have a do not disturb. So Colin actually makes love to her, does his thing. And then he goes away to the window and looks out the window as he's smoking a cigarette. They're both naked. And she says, why did you leave? Did I disappoint you somehow?" Like, she's ready to have more sex. And she also makes the remark, "Or do you always finish so quickly?" And then he says, "Quickly, Mr. Vries, like the way you finished Pierre." So and then she's like, "Holy crap, this guy knows I just killed Mr. DeVries." And he says, "Sorry to disappoint you, Dominique." So they get in like a little fight as they're naked near the bed. And he says, "Mr. DeVries, you don't have much time. Webnet, Dr. Silk, what's your connection?" And there's also the Weaponeers, who fund all these organizations that they were selling the stingers to. And she says, "I don't know what you're talking about." Meanwhile, there's a bunch of guys breaking in to try to rescue Dominique. And he comes in and he's like, "Dominique, where are you?" And he has like this silhouette of Ninjak in the window. And they're like, "Kill him. He's the assassin." Well, he had put her near the window, kind of wearing some of the Ninjak cloak. And they had shot Dominique. And he's like, "Oh, shit." And the one guy tells him, "What are you going to tell Dr. Silk?" And he's like in a little panic. So Dominique got shot up with a bunch of Uzis. And there's a rose that Colin King threw on her, a black, you know. So it's very interesting, because I think in Unity 15, he also was going on a mission where he could have done the easy thing and stole the device, but he's like, "Nah. I think I'm going to have sex with the woman first and then get the device." So it's very much in tune with what this was. And we see Colin talking to his handle, Monsieur Montblanc. That's his like handle in the organization. And they're talking about what's going on with Dr. Silk and stuff. And he's like, "You got to be careful. He let Sala live for a reason, but he says his employer won't be as forgiving as he learns what's transpired, and they're going to come after us. They're going to come after us hard." So he's basically saying, be very careful. That'll come into play later as we get on to the story. And then we have a scene here that's very interesting. It gives the Weaponeer file report. And it's basically the history of Dr. Silk, which talks about him being born in 1942, Harvard Medical School in 1967, postdoctoral fellow at the Salk Institute. And it says his present location is unknown. 1977, Silk and his partner, Dr. Marcus Bodane, form ComSat Industries. 1979, ComSat tenders public offering after rapid expansion. 1983, six die in ComSat laboratories, all except for Dr. Silk. 1985, Dr. Bodine commits suicide after losing control of ComSat to Silk. 1986, Dr. Silk takes ComSat private, expands into new ventures. 1988 to present, files reveal ComSat International Front for WebNet organization, a legal consortium of technical, industrial, and financial institutions with holdings and interests worldwide. Details to follow. So it's like a history of Dr. Silk, which is really important. And then we got one of the investors going to see Dr. Silk and meet him, and he's going with Sala, I believe. And Sala's getting him worried. And as they get there, they're going to start talking about selling weapons to various countries. And they're wondering if they have like a dollar value and stuff like that. And it's like in the million, you know, in addition, they'll have $1 million of fees. And Mr. Sala's there with this new guy, this new investor. And what they show on the screen in front of everybody is Mr. DeVries getting killed. And Sala's kind of like defending himself. He's like, what is this, Dr. Silk? Like, he knows Dr. Silk is there. And then the chair strap comes and like fastens him in, and Dr. Silk wills himself in. And he says, what do you think? I'm stupid. I know what you did. You killed Dominique. I know that you killed Dominique. And he did, but he did it accidentally. They gunned her down. And he's like, oh, crap. And he, like, goes, Allah. And Dr. Silk looks terrible. He's in a wheelchair. He looks like he's 102. I mean, he just looks old. And he's fast into machines that are keeping him alive. And Fitzhugh is there. This is cool because they use Fitzhugh a lot in the new books, in the new Unity stuff. So it's very important. He's kind of like the guy that's taking care of Dr. Silk. And what Dr. Silk does is, a tube goes over the chair that Sala is sitting in, and he's sprayed with a mist. And that mist is a Brazilian plant extract that stimulates black widows. And he just floods that tube with black widows, and it just kills him dead. And then Dr. Silk mentions that he, in order to make control of everything and not lose control, he needs to take out Ninjak. So that's one of his primary goals. As Ninjak's trying to protect his own agents, like Jock and Mont Black, he actually comes in, and one of the agents gets killed immediately with a knife to his back. And then Mont Black is also attacked, and he's shot. But he does live because Ninjak attacks the two guys that shoot him. And it's pretty brutal what he does to take him out. But he does take him out. And then a car comes, and it's Mont Blanc. And he says, Colin, get in the car. And they both will themselves out. And then there's a sniper pointing at both of them, but he doesn't fire. He says, we're going to let them escape. And they do escape, but as they escape, the car's been rigged. And Colin knows this. He tries to break the window open, but he can't break it. It's bulletproof. He does shatter it, but it doesn't do its job. And all of a sudden, black water starts coming in, and they start drowning, and it's to be continued. And on the cover, it's like black water to be continued, and it's got a skull, and it's a really brilliant cover for number two. And it makes you want to just freaking jump right in. But the cover is really cool, and it is a wraparound chromium cover, so really nice cover, really nice book, which will lead us into Ninjak number one, volume two, which is when well into Acclaim purchasing Valiant, and when you read this, you really have to go in the frame of mind that it's kind of like the New 52, except the New 52 kept a lot of the historical things, but they did revamp certain things. But this was like a total revision, reimagining of the universe. And if you go in with that perspective, I think you're going to enjoy this Ninjak quite a bit. Just shift minds and pretend it's not Colin King and it's not Dr. Silk and Webnet and all this stuff, the Weaponeers, and it's not that. What it is now is it's about a kid, Danny, who becomes Ninjak through a video game. So it's almost, it kind of has like a Last Starfighter feel, if you enjoyed the Last Starfighter. Just a kid interacting with the video game that becomes Ninjak. So having said that, I am going to talk about the creative team. This guy sported two covers, by the way. It has one that was a standard cover and one that is a landscape cover that's like a painted Ninjak cover. I have both of them. They're really, really cool covers. I still think Volume 1 has a better cover. But the creative team is Kurt Busiek, who's really good. And if you're not reading Astro City right now, you're making a mistake. You really need to get it and jump on. Neil Vokes does a fantastic job for this type of book. I don't know if it would work well if we had put him on with the original team. I'm not sure. But with this flavor of book, he's like one of the perfect artists for this book. But the cover date on it is 3/1/1997. So, you know, we've jumped several years, 3 years into the future. Movies at that time, Dante's Peak, I saw that one. Absolute Power, Vegas Vacation. I saw that at the theaters and I was kind of lukewarm on it. And I love the vacation movies. But as I've seen Vegas Vacation over and over, and I must have seen it about 10 times since, I really love that movie. That Darn Cat, Blood and Wine, Booty Call, and Donnie Brasco. So those are some of the movies. The Hot Billboard 100, Spice Girls, Wannabe, Puff Daddy, Can't Nobody Hold Me Down. Some of the... those are the songs. Sorry. Those are the Hot 100, the Billboard 100 are albums. We got Leanne Rimes, Unchained Melody, The Early Years, Live, Secret, Samandi, the Howard Stern Private Parts soundtrack. I really like the movie, Howard Stern Private Parts. That was a good movie. We got Scarface, and I can't read my own writing. So those were the Billboard 100 that came from that particular month. Of that, I owned Live. I still own Live, the Secret Samandi CD. And I saw them live in Denver, and it was a really, really, really good concert. So that leads us into Volume 2. And this one that I'm covering that I pulled out of the long box is the alternate cover. It's not the primary cover, and it features Ninjak fighting two guys. And it's the landscape mode, and it's the painted one. It's probably the better of the two covers. If you, I would like to know what you guys think, but I think it's the better of the two covers. Also, it's interesting to note that the inker on this one is Michael Avon Oeming, because he's doing a lot of things for Image Comics right now, and he's done a lot for Powers, which is becoming a TV show. I think if you own the PlayStation. I'm sorry for that, but I have to drink some water. Okay. So you open the first page and you hear, "I call on the power of Ninjak." And he's playing a video game and it looks like an Xbox controller, not a PlayStation controller. But there's a lot of cool references in here. And his buddy Town is telling him, you know, Danny is saying, You know, I hate that saying, I call on the power of Ninjak. It sounds like He-Man. And it, you know, like, I am power. And then there's some cool references here for, he says, you play that Ninjak game over and over again. This is the sixth game you played today. And he says, you play it at the arcade, you play it on the Sega Saturn, and now you're playing it on my PC. I love the Sega Saturn. And, I came from the Sega world. Well, I kind of went. Fairchild was my first system, and that was a wonky system, man. If you saw the controller for it, you need to look it up. The Fairchild, it was sold through Sears. It had Pong. It had some weird air battle games that were even more primitive than Atari. And then I went from that Fairchild, I went to Atari, and that's the Atari 2600 was my game system for a long, long, long time. I never went to a television, but I played in television a lot with my uncle, especially the sports games. And I'm sorry. But from there, I believe I went to the ColecoVision. And the one thing I really liked about the ColecoVision is the ColecoVision had an Atari 2600 adapter. So I could still play my ColecoVision and put in the adapter and play all my Atari games. It was like a brilliant thing. And I love the ColecoVision. It's at my brother's house right now. But from the ColecoVision, I went to the Sega Genesis. And from the Sega world is kind of where I really played a lot of games. Oh, no, sorry. Screwed up. I think after the ColecoVision, I had a Nintendo, the first generation 16-bit Nintendo system. And then I went to Sega Genesis. And from Sega Genesis, I went to the Sega Dreamcast, which was probably my favorite system of all time. And then I went to the Xbox, and that's where I stopped, the first generation Xbox, and I kind of got out of gaming. But this has references to that, and it's kind of cool. And he mentions that he's fighting two villains, Brutacon and Krennic. And he said, and Town, that's his nickname, and we'll get to his name later. But he says, I thought we were going to film more scenes of our movie, Godzilla versus Wombatra. And you can see some of the action figures and stuff that they're using to film their movie, which is also kind of cool. So he actually like finishes the game. It says Brataka down, and he's like, "What? I wonder what's going to happen now." And then it says Shifter down, and then he's getting to the latest crime lord, and it says, "Okay, let's see what happens now when I tromp the last one." And at the end of the game, it says Ninjak forever, and he's like, "Huh?" And he says, you lost, but you never lose. And he says, that's the screen. And Denny gets electrocuted from the screen monitor. Like this bolt of lightning comes out and he gets electrocuted. Town freaks out. He thinks that Denny's dead. And he was passed out for several minutes, 2 minutes before he woke up. So it panicked Town. He thought he was electrocuted. And that's all they're talking about. He's like, man, you were electrocuted. We need to get you to the hospital. And he's like, you know what, Town? I feel great. I haven't felt this great in a long time. And he says, "I you don't even have to walk me home." And he says, "Forget that. Walk you home. I need to make sure you're okay, or your family will kill me. Your mom will kill me. And I thought you were dead." And he says, "Well, hold a minute. I think I'm gonna make a pit stop at the comic shop. This is awesome." So he actually goes to his comic shop. And they mention references. He goes, I forgot to pick up the new Savage Dragon. That's cool. I love Eric Larson. I love Savage Dragon. And there's a reference to Savage Dragon. He says, Danny, you don't need comics. You need to see a doctor. Comics cure anything. They're the cure. So he sees that a woman's working. Her name is Tanya's, and she's he has a crush on her, and she looks like she might be 5, 6 years older than Denny. And he's got a crush on her, and he takes his comics to the shelf, and he's getting to check out, And he's like, he tries to make small talk with her. He's like, what you reading? And she says, Death of a Salesman. And he goes, good. And he goes, yeah. And he just leaves. He says, oh, that's cool. Bye. And then Town's like, why didn't you talk to her? Did she shoot you down? He says, look, I've been buying Uncle Scrooge Adventures from her for 2 years now. It's kind of hard to segue into you have nice skin. So I thought that was cool. And then nearby you have this like electronic eyes that are beaming over the city. And it looks like something out of the video game. And it's watching somebody. And it's watching this character that's kicked out of a bar. And they're basically bouncers that are telling him, you stay out and you sober up. The guy's drunk and he said, I lost my job. Can I even drink in peace? Everybody's dumping on me. So this thing says, you seek power? It talks like electric talk. If you seek power, I can give you that attention, you know. So it's going to give him some power, probably turn him into one of the characters in the video game. So he gets home and he's like, thanks for walking me home, Town. I got to go in. And his house is chaos. It reminds me of 16 Candles. If you watch 16 Candles and they go into the house, the daughter's getting married and she's got other pieces of the family and the grandparents are in, everybody's here, but in this it's just the family. But the mom is fixing the one girl's dress, one of his sisters is playing the trumpet, the other sister's playing the piano, and one of the sisters is on the phone. So he's got four sisters, the father's nowhere in sight. Sounds like the father's on assignment somewhere. His sister wants to talk to him, but he wants to talk to his mom. He's like, mom, can I please talk to you for a minute? And she's like, I am really busy. I have to finish this wedding dress, Denny. So he actually goes up and gets on the computer. And his older sister's there, and she wants to protect him. And she just wants him to socialize more. And she's like, we need to really talk, Denny. You didn't go to the pep rally. And he said, and Denny's talking through the door. He's like, the school's got drug dealers and guns and metal detectors, and you're worried about the lack of support for the football team? And she says, it's not about support, it's about making friends. Denny says, I have friends. And she says, one, and he's as weird as you, and all you do is play computer games and solve puzzles. You're going to grow up miserable and alone. So she's trying to help him get a social life. He doesn't want that. He's perfectly happy having Town as his best friend. And he pops in the video game. And it says, I call on the power of Ninjak. And he repeats after it. He turns into Ninjak. And he's like, holy crap, what just happened? And his sister's talking him through the door still. And she's like, Denny, are you there? And he says, I'm Ninjak. He says, oh, my God. He takes off his mask. He's like, I'm a Chinese guy. And I should mention that the Town is African-American. Denny's kind of like a white guy. And he's got a family of a mother, a father, which we don't see. They might be divorced. I'm not sure. Or if he's just away on assignment. And he's got four sisters, and one sister cares about him and is trying to give him a social life. But he pops out of the window before his sister opens the door. And he is totally a ninja. And he's like flipping all over. And he said, I never felt like this. This is amazing. I got all these powers. This is great. The first thing he does is go tap on Town's window. Town freaks out. This is kind of like Tom Hanks in Big. When Tom Hanks is huge and he goes and sees his buddy. And his buddy panics. And his mom is like, oh my God. There's somebody in my son's, you know, thinks he's kind of a molester that kidnapped him. Well, he's like, what are you doing? Who are you? Why are you dressed as Ninjak? While they're on Town's computer, they see the news flash in the news minute, and it says that a character from the Ninjak video game is threatening the whole part of Manhattan. So they're in New York. And Ninjak takes off to fight him, and the character is Brutakan. And it is that guy that was in the bar that was drunk, that was kicked out by the bouncers, and he kind of talks like the Hulk. Or Solomon Grundy. More like Solomon Grundy, this character. So if you're familiar with the Hulk or Solomon Grundy, you know what I'm talking about. But they get into a fight, and it's a pretty good fight. It's pretty much Ninjak just avoiding all of his punches. And punching as necessary and just getting the character really pissed off as he attacks. So it's like, kind of like you're pissing off the Hulk if you have Spider-Man bouncing around and trying to Hulk's trying to hit him, but he can't hit him. So he's getting really frustrated, and he's got a ninja star. He pulls out of his jacket, and he's like, well, first he pulls out his staff, and he hits him with the staff, but it breaks. And then he pulls out his nunchucks and just like wails on him really fast, and it does nothing. And he says, well, like in the video game, I know I beat this guy a billion times in the video game. What am I gonna do? Well, I'm gonna take this shuriken and throw it at him. But you know what? That shuriken has poison on it. And what if this guy is a kid just like me who was playing the video game but became a villain instead of the ninja? He says, I can't kill him. I can't risk killing him. So what he eventually resorts to is him fighting underneath like part of a building and him taking out the support beams, and it crushes him. And then that's how he defeats him. And the police want him for questioning, but all of the other people are like, you're our hero. And he just takes off before the police can, you know, get him in for questioning. And sure enough, they in the wreckage, they dig it up and they find that guy that's down on his luck that became that character. And Town is walking away, and Ninjak comes and he says, holy crap. And he's like, can you change back? And he goes, well, in order to turn into Ninjak, I say that what the beginning of the video game is, so maybe I should say Ninjak Forever at the end. And he turns back to Danny, and he's kind of like Shazam. He could change into Ninjak as he sees it. And he's like, well, what's going on? Town is really happy. He's like, this is crazy. And he says, by the way, ninjas are Japanese, not Chinese. And so he's excited about what's happened, but he says, I wonder what's going to happen when the rest of the Dark Dozen start turning up and those electric eyes start going over and it's looking at various people like it's going to grant them power, and it's to be continued. And it says, on to the next level. So yeah, it was quite exciting. You guys might not like it, but if you go in with the right frame of mind, I think you will enjoy this first issue. It is a good first issue, whether it's not you can call it Ninjak or not. That's to be questioned, but I think if you read it and you give it a chance and you look at it for what it is, I think you will enjoy it. If you like Last Starfighter, if you like Shazam, it kind of has that feel. It also has a lot of references from that time period, which I really love. It shifts your mind into that time period. So this Ninjak number one, volume one, I probably read maybe four times now. This one I've read three. So pretty close. And that leads us into volume three. So what's going on in volume three? Well, that just happened. It came out in March 2015. It's written by Matt Kent and Clay Mann. Matt Kent's one of my favorite writers of all time. Clay Mann killed it in this issue. There's a lot of movement in this issue, especially with the first part of the story. And what he does in the drawings is phenomenal. And I don't know how Matt Kent got him those stances or those action scenes, or if Clay Mann just did them, but whatever it was phenomenal. But bit movies wise, we got Chappie, Unfinished Business, Cinderella, It Follows, Run All Night, The Gunman, Divergent, the second one, Insurgent, Home, and Get Hard. Some of the top songs are Sam Smith, Lay Me Down, and I'm not into modern music right now, so I don't know a lot of these. Years and Years, titled King. Something called I Flow Ride It, CDFR, I don't know what that is either. Eli Goldig, Love Me Like You Do, Rihanna and Kanye West. How do you say that? I can never pronounce it. You tell me a thousand times. Kanye West. Thank you, Barb. 4 or 5 seconds. That's so these are some of the top songs. Some of the albums are the 50 Shades of Grey is really popular, Taylor Swift 1989, and Kelly Clarkson Piece by Piece. Drake, if you're reading this, it's too late. And Ed Sheeran X. You know what? All those music, I don't know any of it. I know who Kelly Clarkson is because she won the American Idol, I think the first season or second season. And I'm aware of Taylor Swift. I think I've heard a couple of her songs. 50 Shades of Grey, I have no business watching that. Drake and all these other bands, I just don't know. So that's what's going on now. And plus, I'm into 40s music right now, so it's kind of taking me away from current music like almost 100% of the time. And then the other time, I'm listening to podcasts. So, and I apologize for the sniffling and this throat thing. You're going to hear spikes because I can see them as I'm recording. I hope you don't hear too much of it. Matter of fact, I'm going to get another throat drop because I think it was helping me out. And see if that reduces my coughing and my hacking. So, Volume 3. Brilliant cover. There's a couple covers I really love. I think one of them was by Clay Mann. I only own two. There's a lot of covers. And there's one by Louis LaRosa. Does a fantastic job. That's cover A, pretty much. That's the standard cover that you'll get if you order the bundle from DCBS, which is fantastic. 50% off every month. You just go and say you want the bundle. Every issue, 50% off. Shipped to you. You pay for shipping, and it's worthwhile. Plus, you can get 40% off all DC, 40% off all Marvel, 40% off all Image, 35% off or 30% off some of those really hard to find independents. It's like 40% off of Boom. You know, there's a lot of specials that are just 50% off. Like if you buy the whole Secret War bundle, you get 50% off. They do sponsor the Taylor Network, but I'm not part of the Taylor Network other than I'm part of the Valiant Podcast, which is part of the part of the network. And but I support DCBS because I love them. They allow me to buy a lot of comics, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be buying as many comics as I do. So I'm not a sponsor directly. Well, Valiant Podcast is, so. But check out them. I have been a customer since like 2006 and haven't wavered, and I've actually moved 80% of my business over to DCBS. The other 20% I do my local shop. So that leads us to Ninjak by Matt Kent, Clay Mann. Inside the inside cover, you get some tidbits about what's in Ninjak's belt. I recommend you read all of this stuff. I learned my lesson as I just read one of Matt Kent's new books, Pastaways, and I was confused. I was confused because I didn't read the cover. On the cover, it introduces the characters. And in the inside cover, it gave you a synopsis of where you were starting in the story. And supposedly, if you had read Dark Horse Presents number 6, it got you to that point. But I didn't read Dark Horse Presents because Dark Horse throws me off, because they sometimes reprint some of those anthology series into regular comics, and you can buy that series, and then you don't have to wade through all the whole anthology. And sometimes it's original content, so you kind of roll the dice. And I was hoping that everything that was in Pastaways would start it. But that's another Matt Kent book. That's another company. Let's jump into Ninjak number 1. Phenomenal cover by Louis LaRosa. And you see a martial arts movie being played and in a theater. And there's kind of one lone boy with his eyes wide open, kind of like when I saw Star Wars for the first time, or Superman. My eyes were just open. I had goosebumps on my arms, and I was eating popcorn, and I was blown away. He's watching this martial arts movie like that's him, and that is Colin King as a child. And he looks really well to do. And then it cuts to now. Ninjak's in a field briefing. He's basically saying, you have to go after this character, Raku. She's been held in a temporary Russian portable containment center. But I should warn you, she is reported that she feels no pain, and that some say that she might get pain, but she thrives on pain, and she actually gets joy from pain, so it's either one or the other. She is a master of improvisation. She has had genetic tailoring, making her hair unique. Braided together, she can make these strands so they can cut metal. And this is weird. It can also make us incinerary capability. So that's her hair. That's bizarre. So that's like the genetic tailoring that they're talking about. And she's also has the ability to manipulate people psychologically, because she can talk the guards into killing themselves. Like, she's done that in Russia. She talked the guards into killing themselves. I saw that recently on a TV show, and I can't really remember what it was. Oh, it was in The Flash. The Trickster had done that. I knew I'd seen it recently. But she is currently breaking out of that Russian prison with no clothes and no weapons, just her own body, using her body as a weapon. And she's kind of like sort of naked, but she has like mummy strands over her privates and kind of on her body, but loosely on her body, like it may fall off at any time. And she's killed all the guards, and she accesses the computer, and she's using the computer to escape that prison. Meanwhile, Ninjak comes, and she thinks Ninjak's there to keep her in the prison. So they get into a fight. Like, she turns, she sees that Ninjak's got a sword. So she sees the guard that she just killed. There's a gun that he had. She takes her toes, and the way the art is, it's brilliant. She takes her toes and flings the gun up in the air. So she catches the gun and just starts firing it at Ninjak. And Ninjak has, like, the forearms are bulletproof. So you see it go, blam, ching, ching, ching. He blocks them. And then she, like, flips in the air and goes after him with the strands of hair. And here's where you see the strands of hair. And the first time I did not notice it. The second read I did, there's a panel there where some of those strands hit the blade. They hit Ninjak's sword. And they actually start cutting into the sword. And who knows what if they slice right through. But Ninjak does get a shot in as that's happening right to her face. Raku, who is this new character, takes out the cartridge of her gun, and she has one bullet in the chamber. She throws that chamber in the air towards Ninjak, and then takes that one bullet and then shoots the whole cartridge. So there's like a huge explosion in front of Ninjak. But he manages to shield himself just in time. But he's like, as they're going to fight again, he's like, wait for it. He says, I'm not here to hurt you. And he blows a hole in the wall right behind her. And he says, stop fighting me. Just go get out. He blew a hole in the wall so she can escape. So Ninjak was there on a mission so Raku could escape. And he said, if you had continued to hack into their system, a micronuclear burst would have blown this whole thing up. So I just saved your life. And she still hasn't said a word. And she takes off. And as he's on with Neville, Ninjak, they talk about not leaving that place. Don't leave it exposed. So he blows it up before he leaves. Gets in his ship and takes off back home. Then you get another flash back to the child. And it looks like the movie he was watching was Chi-Chi's Revenge, which I should Google that. But that's what he was watching, and he seems to be in an area that's a shady part of town because they got a lot of, like, X-rated stuff. And he calls a taxi, and he's like, kind of young to be in this part of town, aren't you? Where are your parents? And he says, my parent, Colin, young Colin, because this is the past. And he looks like he might be 7 at this time. He says, "My parents couldn't care less." And then he tells him how to get to his house. He says, "Take Junction 8 there." And he says, "Junction 8, isn't that King's Castle?" And he says, "I just call it home." So he takes him there, and then you flash forward again, and it's now, and Neville's talking to Colin about the security of the place and his next mission. And this is where we learn something extraordinary. Okay, Matt Kent uses words, and then he takes those words and makes them something else, and he did this with Unity. Unity is a word, unity, but if you learn about it, the groups, there's a history of the Unity groups, and it really is Unit Y, okay? Well, Ninja, Ninjak is really Ninja K, okay? So he gives him this file and said, "Look, here's a history of stuff. This, I shouldn't be telling you this because it's off the record, but we have Ninja A through J, and then there's you." And he says, Colin says, "There's actually a Ninja A?" And he says, "There was." And then anyway, they bring out the new mission. And he's to go undercover and target this guy, Cannon, who's one of the Weaponeers. And the Weaponeers are run by this thing called the Shadow Seven. So there's seven of them. And he says, "You have to go undercover. You just freed Raku, which will be good with this one guy, Cannon, and spelled with a K, that you need to..." He looks like a sumo wrestler. "But you have to go undercover to get him, and he's a billionaire. And he's got weird things that he might make you do." And one of the first things that he does is he has to sing a song in front of him. And then after the song is done, he's like, "Take off your clothes." And all the time, he's like, "This is normal. Like, he's having me do this so I don't have any wires or anything. He's seeing if I'll do it and if I'm not shamed by it." And they do a good job of, like, giving him a backstory that'll allow him into the organization. He wants to get into the organization, and he wants the Weaponeers to build him a weapon. And it's really to uncover who the seven people are. They know Cannon, and a lot of people have died giving them that information. And they don't know who the other six are. And his whole job is to find out who they are. And then the scene cuts back to a flashback where the taxi drops him off, and he has to crawl into bed. And then, like, their version of Alfred shows up, and he's like, "Master Colin, stepping out at this late of an hour, you know better than that." And what this guy does is he pulls out a belt, and he looks like he's going to whip the crap out of him. But we don't see it happen. It just looks like that's going to happen. He goes, "Your parents are gone. You can't be doing this." And he looks real stern, and you don't. It's a real awkward scene. You don't know what's going on. But then you cut to the present. And you see that Colin King is wearing, like, these really tight jeans, like a teenager would wear, and a little crop top that barely will cover his belly. And you're like, "What, you know, what happened?" And what Cannon did is when he stripped him, he left him in the middle of Tokyo, I believe. And he had to find his way back by 8 a.m. the next day. So he had two unconscious teenagers who passed out. He took the pair of skinny jeans and the moped and a shirt, I guess, from a kid and wore it back. And he got back to the place in time. So the guy now believes him that he has the resolve that he needs to be part or to request a weapon to be made by this organization. And the last trial is he basically has these guys just beat the shit out of him. And Ninjak's like, "I could take all these guys out, but I have to hold back and just let them beat me up." And it's like artistry, because on the next page you see that scene with the butler kind of guy ready to beat him with the belt. And it's like he survived this beating in present time and he survived this beating in the past. And that makes him who he is. We see Raku again. She's the bodyguard that he freed for Cannon. And he says, "Well, what do you want from me now?" And he says, "I got this stealth schematic, and I want it outfitted with top-secret government nanotech. along with an array of chemical weapon payloads. Can you do it? And he said, yes, we can do it with pleasure. And that was the first part of the story. The second part of the story is Lost Files. It gives some of the backstory about Colin King. And this was 10 years ago. It's written by Matt Kent again, with Butch Geis as the artist. And it takes place with him talking to a lady that's trying to, her name is Angela, and she's trying to give him the backstory of what he needs to do for his next mission. And he's like to pretend that he's to be engaged and be married to some woman, and he's, and his woman's having trouble finding a dress, and he's going undercover and he has to know this, and the wedding is stressing him out and all this stuff. So she's getting him set up for this. And later in the evening, they're going together and it's raining. And they get attacked essentially, and Colin ends up fighting some guys and they take him out, but the girl gets away. And that was kind of what his mission was. And Angela is basically saying, she did make it out, Colin, and we retrieved you soon after. And she says, I'm your handler, Colin. It's my job to keep you safe. And he's like, thank you, Angela. And she says, can I just say, next time, try not to pick a dark alley. Stick to the crowded streets. You're a spy, Colin. So you're not a fighter. So she's saying, you're like James Bond, but you're not. You're to go undercover and do stuff, but you're not a fighter. So maybe he's going to become a fighter in future issues, because this was 10 years ago. And it's to be continued. A phenomenal book, and highly recommend. Actually, I'd recommend all three of these, just like I did XO. And let's do the verses part of it now. This is why we're doing this podcast to begin with. Okay, we're putting them all together. The covers. Okay, we're just going to look at the ones that I have. That's a tough one, because these are all like good covers. But I am going to go with Present Day Ninjak, Volume 3, by Louis LaRosa. Man, that's a tough one, because that Casada one is just, phew, it's good. And I also even like the Volume 2 one. It is also good. I will put them in the covers in the show notes, so you'll be able to see them. Also, okay, so that's the covers. The writing. Which story did I like the most? Well, this is an interesting one, because before I went on vacation, I liked Volume 1 better. And as I did a reread on these, which, you know, it's the third time I've read the Volume 3, the fifth time I've read Volume 1, and the third time I've read Volume 2, I am going to award the winner for the writing to Volume 3. That was a tough one. But I'm going to do that. Okay, so art, interiors. Oh, man, this is another tough one. Because even Neil Vokes is in on this one, because his art works so damn well for this particular title. But, and we had two artists on Volume 3, but I'm going to go with Volume 3 for art. So, the overall winner on those, well, colors, let's talk colors real quick. That's another close one, but I'm going to go with Volume 3. So, A Clear Sweep by Ninjak, Volume 3. Coming in second, a really close second, is Ninjak Volume 1, and a really close third. And if it's really hard to judge this way with the same other two, because it's like apples to oranges. And I almost want to give it a better rating for, like, you could probably hear my voice as I was excited in describing it. It was a fun book. But in close third is Ninjak Volume 2. So that is it. And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope that you'll continue to support the show and give me feedback. And We will talk again in another month or so as I pick another verses, and who knows what that will be. I'm going to try to record another one in 2 weeks, but the one I can promise you is that this will be a monthly, but I want to try to do, my objective is to do it twice monthly, but the one I'm going to guarantee is a monthly podcast because of all the other podcasts I do. So you can, if you wanted to reach me, you can go to Facebook and you can go under Valiant Podcast and leave me a message there, or you can friend me, Mike Myers. You should be able to find me on Facebook. I usually have my face there, and most people know what I look like through Twitter or through Facebook. And give me an IM, letting me know who you are, that you're a listener of the show, blah, 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 and I'll accept your friendship. Or you can just join the Valiant Podcast group by clicking the like button. And you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. That's my email. I would appreciate emails, and I loved reading the feedback that I did get for the previous episode. That was phenomenal. Some phenomenal feedback. I appreciate all of it. And on iTunes, you can leave a review of the show by going to Valiant Podcast and leaving a review there. You know, say, I really enjoy Valiant Versus, or you really enjoy the Valiant Podcast, because I'm on that podcast too, the parent podcast. And we'd appreciate that. It gives the show visibility. Also, if you're getting it off of Stitcher, if you can favorite the podcast, it helps it. On Twitter, I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. That's where you can find me. I usually check. I don't have the credentials to check it, but I usually search for Valiant Podcast if anybody has a question or anything there. I look at that handle as well. So I hope you enjoyed this, and I will continue on this path. I don't know what episode 3 is going to be yet. I have a couple of ideas, and also tweet me if you'd like to see what you liked on the show, some things you'd like to see, and we'll see what we can do. I'll talk to you later, and have a good one. Bye-bye, and be valiant. Oh, and that book from IDW that I couldn't remember the name from that was in that loot crate was Orphan Black number one, which was the number one seller for everything because of that loot crate, because there's like 300,000 subscribers to Loot Crate, and then whatever they sold to comic shops on top of that. That was the name of the book I could not remember, so I just added that in at the end. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
It was an evening I shared with the sun. I got to eat it.